Chapter 3 If You Haven't Recovered Weight. It's been 3 years since the breakup. Wouldn't you think that by now I could move into a new relationship without being haunted by a ghost? I seem to cripple every new relationship because of what happened in the last one. I know I was hurt, but when does it go away for good? I think I'm okay, but then I become emotionally involved with someone and the hurt and anger come rushing back. And guess who I dump it on? It's tough to recover from a broken relationship. When you're in love with a person who loves you back, it's wonderful. But when they don't, it's like the end of the world for some people. There are times when you wonder, will I ever heal? It could be a long-term relationship, an engagement, or a marriage that ended. They're all filled with pain, especially if you're the one rejected. And it may never go away completely if you are a parent. You will always be linked through your children to that individual in some way for the rest of your life. When a relationship dissolves, you are facing a death, the death of dreams, hopes, aspirations, as well as what you actually had in the relationship itself. You're losing a history and a part of your life. Even if you were the person who terminated the relationship because you no longer cared for the person or the relationship, there is still a death, although it may be mingled with relief. In all but a few breakups, each person will play a different role. One is the rejecter and the other the rejectee. A rejecter can suffer just as much as the rejectee. That may sound odd to you, but it's not so much the role you played, but who has the most emotional investment in the relationship. That person has the most to lose, regardless of the way the relationship comes apart. Do women hurt more in a breakup than men? Not necessarily. They hurt differently, just like they tend to grieve differently. Men and women tend to view relationships differently. For example, men don't usually define self-esteem by the success or failure of a relationship, whereas women tend to put more emphasis on the quality of relationships. Women may tend to hurt longer and deeper, as well as second-guess themselves. They may ask, "Where did I go wrong?" Why is this chapter important to you if you are already seeking another person? You cannot move into a new, healthy, and possibly permanent relationship if you still have emotional energy tied up in the last relationship. You may think you've recovered, and perhaps you have, and then again, maybe you haven't. Some individuals haven't recovered, but aren't aware of it until they're in the midst of a new relationship. Then it hits them. And the unexpectedness of it turns their life upside down. They discover they haven't fully let go. When a relationship dissolves, there are actually three different roles for the participants. In your past relationships, you could have experienced all three. One role is called the willing rejecter. In this position, you have divorced yourself emotionally and intellectually from the other person, whether you are in a marriage or a dating relationship. It could have occurred slowly, like a subtle emotion, or suddenly, like a volcano erupting. When you break off the relationship, your behavior is now consistent with your thoughts. Because you are in charge of what is happening, your recovery might be more rapid than if you were the rejectee. You're the one who has had more time to prepare yourself for this decision and act. Your greatest pain and even guilt may be the pain your ex is experiencing. Some people end up being unwilling rejectors. When this occurs, your pain and discomfort can be the same as that of the rejectee. Some have said, "This is crazy. I feel like a villain and a victim at the same time. How did this happen?" It's true. You can end up feeling torn apart. You are the one ending the relationship, and this accounts for your feeling like a villain. But if you still love the person, you feel victimized as well. It's as though your relief over ending the relationship is overshadowed by the emotional pain you experience. Sometimes what prompts you to take the step of breaking up is, in one way or another, already feeling rejected by the other party. Your partner or spouse may be involved with someone else while still with you, or may be consumed by work and sports. Sometimes partners have affairs with things and activities rather than with another person. Sometimes your act of rejecting the person is an act of trying to wake them up so the relationship can be saved. I've seen this happen when the partner was consumed by work, overly involved with their family of origin, involved in drugs, alcoholism, pornography, etc. The difficulty of being an unwilling rejecter is the dual feeling of hoping it's over to escape the pain, but also hoping it will work. You experience blame and grief at the same time or alternate back and forth. This hampers decision making. It's difficult to reconcile a victim and villain when you are both of them. Sometimes you end up returning to the person for a while, hoping that what prompted you to leave no longer exists. If avenue seen some partners return and leave, several times over a period of several years, but frequently the relationship doesn't work out. I have seen a number of marital separations work, though, because there is a greater emotional investment in a marriage than a dating relationship. There is more to lose if it were to dissolve. The classic victim in a relationship breakup is really the rejectee, since they have no control over what is happening. Sometimes you have indications that this may be going to happen, and you're worried about it. Or you could be denying the obvious signs. Yet again, you could be oblivious, and it comes as a major shock. An acquaintance of mine told me his wife suggested they go out to dinner one evening, and while they were sitting there eating, his wife informed him in a very factual way that their 32-year marriage was over and she was filing for divorce the next morning. This came as a complete shock to him, since there were no indications of difficulties or her dissatisfaction. He was crushed emotionally and financially for the next several years. It was a total shock and total rejection. The greater the level of unawareness and suddenness of any breakup, the greater the shock and pain. Not only do you lose the person you still care about, you lose a piece of yourself, your self-worth. Which one of the three have you tended to be over the years? A willing rejecter, an unwilling rejecter, or the rejectee? Is there a pattern, and if so, what does this tell you about your relationships? Which one have you been recently? On a scale of 0 to 10, where are you now in your recovery? How long does the pain last? Norm, how long? How long is this pain going to last? How long is it going to take for me to recover? When will the thoughts, the feelings, the memories go away enough that I can go on with my life? I hear this question frequently, because I work with many people who are experiencing grief in some way over the loss of a relationship. I'm not sure I can give you an exact answer, because the estimates vary. We do know, for example, when you lose a close loved one in what is called a normal death, the average length of time for recovery is about 2 years. With an accidental death, it's 3 years. The authors of Letting Go, a book dealing with recovering from a broken heart, feel, based on interviews with those who suffer from depression, feelings of inadequacy, and loss of self-esteem, the average time it took for normal functioning to return and the absence of haunting memories was usually half the time the relationship existed. That would mean a 4-year marriage or relationship would take 2 years to recover from and a 12-year marriage or relationship, 6 years of recovery. I'm not sure that this should be used as a guideline, since every relationship, every person, and every situation varies. It may be accurate if the person didn't engage in their grief work and move toward recovery. The authors also state that by following the principles suggested, the symptoms mentioned will leave in 3 months. Two other authors have described the state you feel during a breakup as love shock, which is basically a mixture of numbness, disorientation, emptiness, and a jumble of numerous feelings which churn about. It is similar to a crisis reaction or grieving over any kind of loss. They suggest it takes most people about a year to complete their love shock experience, but it's not unusual for it to take longer. I think a rule of thumb to follow is, the more you have learned to cope with crisis and the more knowledgeable you are about the losses of life and grief, the better you will be able to recover. What happens when it's over? When a close relationship ends, a part of you wants to try again with a new relationship. But another part of you says, forget it. It isn't worth the risk. You are afraid the past will recur and your new relationship will also end in a painful breakup. Or you are afraid you will always feel the loss and pain of your previous breakup and never be able to reach out and love again. This fear is intensified whenever you relive the breakup. Every time you relive the experience in your memory, the emotional sledgehammer crashes down on you again. I have even heard people say they thought they were going crazy during this phase. The fear of reliving the past paralyzes the normal process of building a new relationship. This fear creates a hesitancy to invest energy, love, and transparency in a new love interest. You ask, what if this happens again? Many people who are afraid to move ahead in a new relationship are also afraid to remain behind without anyone to love. But when you jump into a relationship too soon, you contaminate it and avoid dealing with the last one. You feel trapped between the fear of loving again and the fear of never being loved again. It seems to be more intense when you are the rejected person in a divorce. There are additional emotions that feed the fear of loving again. One of them is guilt, the feeling that you have failed yourself, your ideals, your Lord, or the other person, especially if there was sexual involvement and/or living together. Sometimes you feel, I wasted 4 years of my life. This guilt may exist whether you were the rejected person or the rejecting person. Unresolved guilt damages self-esteem, and low self-esteem produces greater fear. If you feel guilty about a broken relationship, it is important to identify whether the feelings are based on reality or imagination, taking the blame for something that was not really your responsibility. Another young woman was dating a 50-year-old man who was crazy about her. One day he introduced her to his 28-year-old son. 5 weeks later, she and the son were married. When breakups occur, you long for the relationship you once had. For some, this longing becomes an obsession dominating every waking moment. Nothing has any meaning until that relationship is restored. There are some who become addicted to a person. We call this obsessive love. This is the belief that this one and only one magic person can meet one's needs. To offset the pain, some people begin binging with one-night stands or eating like food is going to be rationed in the future. Restoration of the relationship exactly as it was happens very infrequently. The feeling of being out of control is particularly devastating, since there is nothing you can do. You can beg, plead, offer bribes, threaten suicide, and so on, all to no avail. Nothing seems to work, nothing will work, and nothing does work. You feel abandoned, forsaken, betrayed, and all alone. Stages of recovery, like the grief we experience when a person dies, the stages you will go through to recover from a lost relationship are predictable. These stages constitute the normal and healthy process of recovery. If the healing is complete, you will have some emotional scars but no open wounds. I have talked to some people who still had oozing wounds from a relationship for over 15 years. That's sad. If you don't grieve, you won't be complete. You have to allow the relationship to die, to be over. If you don't, you're carrying around a corpse with you, and in time it begins to stink. Please keep in mind that the stages identified here vary in their length and intensity, depending upon the duration and strength of the relationship. When the breakup is not your doing or desire, the result is even more intense. There are usually 6 stages you will go through when a love relationship falls apart. Your pain will be the greatest during the first 3 stages. You can count on that. As you move through each stage, the intensity of your pain will diminish, but it can come roaring back when you least expect it. The further along the path you proceed, the less fear you will experience. The worst thing to have happen is to get stuck in a stage and not complete the process. Some of these stages overlap, and you may move back and forth between them for a while. This is quite normal. It is a part of the healing process. So when you move into the next stage, don't be thrown when the previous one resurfaces. Stage 1, shock. When you first lose a love relationship, you feel dumbfounded and overwhelmed by shock. We call this the impact stage in a crisis. Even when the breakup or divorce has been anticipated, the reality of it has a unique effect. Often there is a sense of numbness. Some people are unable to carry on their day-to-day activities, even eating and sleeping are chores. You live by your feelings at this stage. Whether or not you can identify it, you will experience an intense fear of being alone or of being abandoned forever. But you need to experience these feelings in order to move through the healing process. At this stage, you need to have other people around you, whether or not you feel like having them around. Just the presence of other people can help ease the fear of loneliness. Stage 2, grief. The grief stage may be extensive, because it includes mourning the loss of what you shared together and what you could have shared together. During this time, anger may be experienced, and in some ways needs to be expressed. You may be angry at yourself, at God, and at people who don't understand your grief. You may become depressed about the broken relationship and the hopelessness of relationships in the future. You may tend to see all men or all women from this same perspective. In order to grieve and move ahead, you have to accept the fact that the relationship is over. You realize your loved one is gone, and now you feel empty. Perhaps it's best expressed in an older song by Karen and Richard Carpenter, "Goodbye to love, there are no tomorrows for this heart of mine. Surely time will lose these bitter memories and I'll find that there is someone to believe in and to live for, something I could live for." 27. When the ended relationship is a divorce, this is the time when certain divorce myths rear their heads. The first is, nobody understands. It is the feeling that your situation is so unique and unusual, it is inconceivable to think anyone else could understand. It is important to realize that those who have gone through this do understand every aspect of it. They understand the feelings of abandonment, self-blame, other blame, anger, guilt, the knife-like anguish and pain. "I am going to die" is a predominant feeling. Everything is seen through this filter. But as one person described it, "Do I hurt a great deal at this time? Yes. Do I wish I were dead? Yes. Do I wish I could die? N0. Many people experience mild paranoia. Statements like, "Everyone is talking about me, I'm the subject of their conversations, I can tell they're avoiding me," and "No one wants to be around me," are frequently made. Unfortunately, the person often believes these statements, and worse yet, in some narrow, unloving churches, they are sometimes true. Emotional sensitivity is heightened at this time, and becoming self-conscious is common. Other common myths of divorced people are, "Everybody hates me, God hates me, and He is so displeased with me." These thoughts are just not true. God hates the act of divorce, but He does not hate the divorced person. When people respond to you differently, it is not because of a defect in you. They could be self-conscious because they don't know what to say. After all, who has ever given us guidelines on how to respond when someone goes through a broken relationship? In addition to these thoughts, an entire range of symptoms may begin to reside in you. Another type of obsessional thinking begins to take you prisoner. It is a sign of hanging on to the relationship. 1. You arrange accidental meetings with the other person. 2. Your thought life is consumed by the other person. 3. You listen for the telephone and run for it when it rings. 4. You listen to sad songs and think they are about you and the one you lost. 5. You think you see your former love or his or her car everywhere. 6. You want to contact the person, but you are afraid of rejection. 7. You follow people or cars thinking it is the person you lost. 8. You spend a great amount of time thinking about the person, devising plans of what to say or how to get him or her back, or wondering if what he said when you were together was untrue. 9. You just know that this relationship was the best one you could ever have. Some even send unwanted and unwelcome gifts, phone them continuously, drive by their home or workplace, show up unannounced, or even engage in stalking them. Unfortunately, some go one step further and give up the crusade to win them back and turn to revenge. What other thoughts do you have? Perhaps it would help to make a list of them and take steps to put them to rest. Thought stopping is a necessary step so that reality has a chance to gain a foothold in your life once again. If you find yourself in this defeating lifestyle, you will need to shut off your obsessive thoughts, obsessive feelings, and obsessive behaviors. If you slow one down, the others will follow. This means no calling, showing up, gifts, letters, etc. When you have thoughts that continue to return again and again, there is hope. They can be evicted from your life. There are two specific steps to take. First, pray out loud, sharing your concern, and describe specifically what you want God to do with these thoughts. Second, read aloud the following passages, which talk about how we can control our thought life: Isaiah 26 verse 3, Ephesians 4 verse 23, Colossians 3 verses 1 and 2, 2 Corinthians 10 verse 5, Philippians 4 verses 6 to 9. Another way to handle these thoughts is a bit wild. Identify one of the most persistent or upsetting thoughts, the one that pops into your head more frequently than any of the others. Select a time when you are fairly calm. Say the statement or statements out loud without crying or becoming angry, if you can. If you can't, that's all right. In time, you will be able to do this. When you say the last word of the statement, slam a book or ruler loudly on a table or just clap your hands. Repeat the sentence and move the noise back one word each time you repeat the bothersome thought. In time, this thought will be interrupted before it has a chance to begin. And as this happens, thank God for taking this thought from your one Ephe. Stage 3, Blame. Feelings of blame, accompanied by anger, may be held toward your former spouse, fiancé or dating partner or even toward yourself. Your behavior during this stage may surprise you as you attempt to rid yourself of these feelings. Your actions may not seem to fit your past patterns. You may engage in compulsive behaviors such as shopping or eating binges, alcohol abuse, or even promiscuity. It is not unusual for people to make poor decisions at this stage. Fears of rejection, isolation, or personal inadequacy prompt some people to act contrary to their own value systems. Fred was a 35-year-old whose wife divorced him to marry her employer. He was devastated by the divorce, but gradually he began to date again. However, he was quite unsuccessful in his new relationships. One day Fred explained, "I guess I'm still angry at Irene for leaving me. But there's no way I can make her pay for what she did to me, and I can't take my anger out on her. So that's probably why these new relationships aren't working out. I like the women I date, but I don't treat them well. I get angry at them, and I'm often rude. That's just not me. I guess I'm trying to get back at my wife by taking my anger out on these other women. And that isn't good for them or for me. I guess I try to hurt them first, because I'm afraid they may hurt me the way my wife did. And I don't ever want to be hurt like that again." Fortunately, Fred had the insight to figure out what he was doing, and eventually he moved out of this stage. During the grief and blame stages, some common mistakes can hinder recovery. Generalizing after any broken relationship is so easy to do. You take one isolated belief or experience and make it apply to life in general. How many times I've heard my counselees say, "All men are sex animals, all women are full of emotions. They can't think." Such generalizations become immobilizer. A frequent mistake is falling into the trap of living by a self-fulfilling prophecy. Perhaps you have heard it or said it, "At 11 never find anyone else. I'm stuck in life. I'll always be single now." This faulty belief blinds us from seeing the possibilities around us. It gives us an attitude and look of defeat. Our self-fulfilling prophecy says more about where we are coming from than where we are going. These prophecies do nothing but undermine and cripple relationships. Another mistake we tend to carry over from a broken relationship is a set of unrealistic expectations. We use words like should and must, and when things don't happen according to our rigid set of beliefs, we perpetuate a life of disappointment. We use expectations for ourselves and for other people. "I have to be perfect for anyone to love me. If I don't meet all his needs, he won't love me. If he reminds me of my former spouse or dating partner, he's not worth being with." Wallowing in self-pity is an emotional trap that frequently follows a severed relationship. But indulging in self-pity blocks recovery and keeps other people from getting close. One of the most destructive responses is not being able to look in the mirror. One day a man in my office made the statement, "Norm, I can't bear to face myself after what's happened in my life." Sometimes these people are best referred to as runners. They are continually on the go and doing things to avoid having to deal with their situation and their feelings. They don't want to face themselves. The familiar patterns are incessant working, playing, being out each night, sleeping, watching TV, and worse yet, moving into alcohol and drugs. The frantic, hectic, busy life is just as bad as a withdrawn, lethargic existence. A very common mistake designed both to overcome the pain of the loss and to strike back is revenge loving. The hurt person plunges into a new relationship prematurely out of anger. This revenge could manifest itself in three different styles. One manifestation is to engage in a new relationship simply to make the other person jealous. Another variation of revenge loving is acting out toward the new person in your life the way you were treated by your former partner. If abuse was part of the history and you were the victim, the tables are now turned. If manipulation was the pattern, in order not to be hurt again, this becomes your weapon and defense. A final variation of revenge loving is developing a relationship in which you are in control so no one can ever control and hurt you again. But in all three of these revenge styles, both you and the new person end up hurt, unhappy, and dissatisfied. There is a better way of draining anger. Revenge just doesn't work. Resentment punishes us more than the other person because most often the other individual isn't aware of the intensity of our feelings. Magnification is also one of the traps and mistakes that occur after a broken relationship. You begin to think about the person you lost and are convinced he is having the time of his life while you are living in despair and discouragement. You feel limited and constrained, while you are sure your ex is living life to the fullest. The major phrase in your vocabulary is, "he is probably" or "she is probably." Magnification can easily lead to martyrdom if you let it. We all have a choice in how we respond. Stage 4, goodbye. This stage is often difficult to face, for it involves finality. If this stage is ignored or neglected, there won't be any recovery. This is when you really finally admit to yourself, the relationship is over. This person is out of my life, and I have to go on. If avenue seen numerous people get stuck on the threshold of this stage, sometimes for more than a year. Some of them seem to move ahead, yet 3 weeks later they are asking the same questions and making the same statements about a reconciliation that will never happen. They are unwilling to say the final goodbye. How do you say goodbye? Every relationship needs some type of eulogy. You need to face your feelings first. Let's consider anger and resentment. Perhaps the initial step in overcoming anger and resentment is to take inventory and identify the hurt, anger, and resentment. One divorced man wrote, "I am so angry at you for your lies and infidelities. I resent the fact that I have to pay you spousal support. It should be the other way around for what you did. I am wounded by your betrayal of me and our wedding vows. I am angry that you have the kids and they are being influenced by your lousy lifestyle and lack of morals." Often, when a person begins listing these resentments, buried hurts and feelings begin climbing through the barriers. This list is for your own use and is not to be shared with anyone else except God. This is not an easy experience. You may find it very emotionally draining. After you have made your list, go into a room and set up two chairs facing each other. Sit in one chair and imagine your ex sitting opposite you listening to what you are sharing. Put their name on a card or use a picture. Read your list out loud with your tone and inflections registering the feelings you have. Don't be concerned about editing what you are saying. Just get it out. Some people keep their list for days, adding to it as things come to mind. Others find it helpful to sit down and share like this several times for the drainage benefits. Don't be surprised to find yourself feeling angry, depressed, intense, embarrassed, or anxious. When you have concluded your time of sharing, spend a few minutes in prayer sharing these feelings with God and thanking Him for understanding what you are experiencing and for His presence in your life to help you overcome the feelings. To become a free person and move forward in life, there is one additional step involved in the relinquishment of your anger and resentment. It is called forgiveness. No one can tell you when it will happen. You cannot hurry it up, for it is a process that takes time. Most of us have our own set of reasons for not forgiving another person. We object to letting him or her off the hook, as it were. One of the ways to allow forgiveness to have a place in your life is to identify the objections you have to forgiving the person who hurt you so much. Take a blank sheet of paper and write a salutation at the top. Use the name of your former partner, dear so and so. Underneath the salutation, write the words, "I forgive you for whatever," then complete the sentence by stating something your ex did that still hurts and angers you. Then capture the first thought that comes to mind after writing the sentence. It may be a feeling or thought that actually contradicts the forgiveness you are trying to express. It may be an emotional rebuttal or protest to what you have just written. Keep writing the "I forgive you for" statements for every thought or feeling that comes to the surface. Your list may fill one page or even two. Don't be discouraged if your angry protests contradict the concept of forgiveness or are so firm and vehement that it seems as if you have not expressed any forgiveness at all. You are in the process of forgiving this person, so keep writing until all the pockets of resentment have been drained. Once again, show this list to no one, but using an empty chair, read the list aloud as though the person were sitting there listening to you. Here is a sample of what a woman wrote to her former husband, who had divorced her. "Dear Jim, I forgive you for not being willing to share your feelings with me. I forgive you for withdrawing from me when I wanted to talk about our problems. I forgive you for not trying to make our marriage work. I forgive you for sitting around watching TV when I wanted to go out and have fun. No, I don't. I still feel cheated by you. You were one way when we dated and then changed as soon as we were married. I am still angry over your silence. Why couldn't you have tried more? We might have made it. It's still hard for me to understand why you didn't want to be with me." After she identified these as her main hurts, she continued to write these forgiveness statements each day for a week until she had no more rebuttals or complaints. When that happens, forgiveness is beginning. Another way to do this is to take just one of the items you resent and write it again and again on the paper, listing every rebuttal that comes to mind until you can say, "I forgive you for," several times without any objection coming to mind. This will move you from living in the past to living in the present. Perhaps Webster's definition of forget can give you some insight into the attitude and response you can choose. Forget means to lose the remembrance of, to treat with inattention or disregard, to disregard intentionally, overlook, to cease remembering or noticing, to fail to become mindful at the proper time. It doesn't just happen. We do it intentionally, with purpose. We are able to forgive because God has forgiven us. He has given us a beautiful model of forgiveness. Allowing God's forgiveness to permeate our lives and renew us is the first step toward wholeness. In response to the question, "How do you know when you have forgiven a person?" Lewis Smedes once said, "You have forgiven when in your heart you begin to wish that person well." When we can pray for that person and ask for God's blessing upon him or her, we have forgiven. But again, it is gradual and may take months or years to work through the hurt and pain of the breakup. To finalize your act of forgiveness, it may be helpful to write a statement of release to your ex. The woman described earlier, who was struggling to forgive her ex-husband, is a good example of what can happen in overcoming the hurt of the past. She said in her release statement, "Dear Jim, I release you from the responsibility I gave you to determine how I have been feeling because of the divorce. I never did understand all that happened to make you the way you were, and I probably never will. It doesn't matter now. What matters is I release you from the bitterness and resentment I have held toward you over the past 3 years. I release you from my expectations of who and what you should have been. I forgive you. Whether your previous relationship was a marriage or not, whether it ended by a divorce, death, or breaking up, a positive step is to write a goodbye letter. The following is an example of a letter a man wrote to his deceased wife when he was ready to remarry. Here is what he said, a goodbye letter. Dear Chrissy, I want to get married again. I didn't want to wait and write you a Dear Chrissy I got remarried letter. You know I loved you when you were here and we were together. Do I still love you? Yes and no. Yes, I still love the person I once knew, the one in my memory. But Chrissy, you aren't here anymore. I can't say, I love you, because there is no you. I can cherish a thought, but I can't love it. Do I miss you? Yes. Do I wish I could see you again? Of course. But I am a person, and I can only love another person. If you were here, I would introduce you to Emily. She's attractive, kind and intelligent, and has a special kind of strength that I admire. She is also very affectionate to Amy and Katie. She treats them LDNDLY very much as you did, although they do not see her as the authority figure you were. I do miss you. And I miss our little Christine more than anyone even you couldn't ever suspect. Please keep her warm. And please love her as only you can. I will love Katie and Amy as only I now can. Another step in this process is desensitizing painful places and locations. I have talked to people who have changed jobs, avoided restaurants and what used to be favorite recreational haunts, and even changed churches because they were painful reminders of what used to be. But this is allowing the other person to control and dominate your life. It is vital that you rehire her to all these places and take control of them. Perhaps you vacationed at some special places before your divorce and you would like to return. But fear holds you back. Take a close friend or relative with you. Give this place to Jesus Christ in your prayers, and ask Him to take the pain away from that place. Go back to the restaurant or church. Make it a special time and ask God's blessing on the location and the occasion. The more you stay away, the greater your fear and aversion. By returning, you dilute the pain. It is common to write a love letter in the building stage of a relationship. It is uncommon to write one to conclude a relationship, yet this practice can definitely put it to rest. This final love letter is one in which you collect all your thoughts, including anger, pleas, rationalizations, concerns, or apologies. Write it all in a letter, but do not mail it. This project could continue for several days, or it could be a one-time occurrence. It includes setting to rest your unfulfilled dreams with this person and what this individual will be missing out on because of not having you as a part of his or her life. This is a cleansing action, especially when you read the letter aloud to an empty chair, give all the contents to God in prayer, free yourself from the tyranny of these thoughts over you, and say your final goodbye. To complete the process, it helps to collect memories and even some actual items you were given by the person and reflect on the positive and negative memories. You may want to discard some and keep some. Stage 5, Rebuilding, and Stage 6, Resolution. At these stages, you are finally able to talk about the future with a sense of hope. You have just about completed your detachment from the other person, hopefully without lingering fears. Healthy new attachments may occur at this time without the past emotional attachment. In meeting with a single parents fellowship group, I asked a number of people to respond to the question, what was the most helpful step you took to recover from a broken relationship? Here are four different responses to show you the variety of methods. Having a relationship with God, therefore, knowing I was not alone. My faith got me through. Having a place to go where I had people to relate to, and could get help, or express my feelings. Having a place where I was encouraged to grow and learn, where tools were given to make this possible. I asked the person to be available to me whenever I had a question about why the relationship ended. He was able to answer questions I had and helped me understand what had happened in his mind. I call this processing what happened so I could understand it and then accept it. This was very freeing for me. I have joined a support group which offers safe and positive relationships with Christians experiencing the same loss as I have. If Avenue been able to reflect, learn, grow, cry, comfort and be comforted. I have experienced love and acceptance when I felt unlovable and unacceptable. I have begun to heal and begun to forgive. Taking stock in myself. I own the problems that led to the breakup. I participated in group education targeted toward equipping people with tools and skills for recovery. We need to remember, however, that there are three possible outcomes of a relationship breakup: a change for the better, a change for the worse, or a return to the previous level of living. At the outset of the breakup, it is almost impossible to conceive of things changing for the better, especially if you are the one who was rejected. In the latter stages of the crisis, you may be able to see glimmers of possibility for positive change. Your judgments and decisions during this turning point in your life will make the difference in the outcome. Then you can move forward.